Welcome to the Development Locker podcast, the podcast designed specifically for aspiring academy football players and their development. I'm your host, Lee Wood, and I'm thrilled to have you join us on this exciting journey. Whether you're a young talent dreaming of making it to the top, a dedicated coach looking for expert insights, or a parent seeking information into how to guide your son along their journey, this podcast is your ultimate resource for everything related to academy football. Each episode will bring you exclusive interviews with renowned coaches, former academy players who have successfully made the transition to professional football, and industry experts who will share their invaluable knowledge and tips to help you excel on and off the pitch. Over the next 48 episodes, we'll be diving deep into the mental and physical conditioning, the various aspects of player development, nutrition, injury prevention, and maintaining a balanced lifestyle to ensure you reach your full potential. We'll also discuss what to do when your dreams come to an end, whenever that may be, along the journey, with insight from those who have gone through this part of the journey and come out the other side a better person. Also, we'll be joined by those who support people like you when, and not if, that day comes when football isn't the only dream you want to pursue. But it's not just about the technicalities of the game. We'll also explore the mindset and mentality required to thrive in a competitive world of academy football. We'll discuss the importance of resilience, self-belief, and effective goal setting to help you overcome challenges and achieve your dreams. So, whether you're looking for guidance on improving your technical abilities, seeking advice on navigating the trials and tribulations of the academy system, or simply want to stay motivated and inspired, we're here to support you every step of the way. Get ready to learn, grow, and be inspired by the stories of those who have walked the same path you're on right now. Together, we'll unlock the secrets to success and help you gain that crucial edge in your academy journey, as well as prepare you for that alternative pathway. So, grab your boots, put on your headphones, and get ready to take your game to the next level. This is your podcast, and I'm thrilled to have you join us as we bring you your interview from the locker. Stay tuned for our weekly episodes, which we'll bring you every Monday morning, and we look forward to you joining us then. Welcome to another exciting episode of our podcast, where we explore the intersection of technology and academy football. Today, we're delving deep into a fascinating topic that's reshaping the way we approach player development. The use of technology and the introduction of artificial intelligence in predicting the player of the future. In recent years, technological advancements have revolutionized various aspects of the beautiful game, from performance analysis to injury prevention and player scouting. Artificial intelligence in particular is now playing a pivotal role in providing valuable insights and predictions that can shape the careers of budding footballers. Throughout this episode, we'll explore how cutting-edge technologies such as data analytics and machine learning algorithms are being utilized by academies to identify talent, enhance training programs, and optimize player performance on the pitch. We'll delve into the exciting world of player tracking systems that capture intricate data. We'll explore how data is processed and analyzed to provide coaches and scouts with a comprehensive understanding of a player's strengths, weaknesses, and potential areas for improvement. But that's not all. We'll also discuss the fascinating realm of AI-driven player predictive models. These intelligent algorithms are designed to analyze vast amounts of data, including performance metrics, player characteristics and historical patterns to predict the future potential and trajectory of a young player. We'll examine the implications of such predictions and discuss the ethical considerations surrounding their use. As we embark on this technological journey, we'll be joined by our esteemed guests from Talent Pathway ID, experts in the sports technology and artificial intelligence, who will share their insights and experiences from the forefront of this ever-evolving landscape. So, whether you're a young player looking to understand how technology can shape your development, or a coach interested in harnessing the power of AI, this episode promises to be an eye-opening exploration into the exciting fusion of football and cutting-edge technology. Get ready to embrace the future of football with open arms. Let's kick off this episode and unlock the secrets of using technology and artificial intelligence in shaping the player of tomorrow, as we bring you this week's interview from the locker. Welcome one and all to season four of the podcast, and we're going to kick things off with Gavin, and we're going to kick things off with question one. And Gavin, on this podcast, we always start with the why. And what I want to know, what our listeners probably more importantly want to know, is why does AI have an emerging role in sport, elite performance, and in particular, the development of talent?
I think the question is probably why not, if I'm honest. Humans are walking side by side with AI in all fields, and performance is no different, really. We're probably high performance talent development and sport in general is going on a journey where AI will certainly be a passenger in the car, if not a navigator. I don't think it will ever be the driver, but that's why it's so important. It's a hot topic. It's fast becoming a proven tool outside of sport to help increase efficiency. And really, high performance sport is all about efficiency. So they should obviously be looking at this for competitive advantage, optimization. And AI might be seen as the enemy by some. But I like to think that sport's a bit of a pioneer when it comes to, particularly with high performance, it drives a lot of aspects around it, and AI is to some extent driving our direction of travel. So it's essential that sport gets on board with it, and I think those that do get on board with it will have a competitive advantage about those that are less early adopters, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, you're saying sport, football in particular, you know, the world that I work in, and you know, I'm sure you'll go on to some of the sports that you've worked in, is football's probably a little bit late, as it normally is the case, to the party and catching up. But there's one or two, maybe three or four even, you know, AI platforms out there. Can you kind of tell us why you think football may be a little bit behind that trend than other sports? Or is that not the case? Is football at the forefront of the use of AI and technology to be able to get that competitive advantage?
I think there's a lot of sort of athlete monitoring softwares out there and technologies that are out there that are claiming to use AI, but I think that what they're doing is they're using it in a silo, which when we get onto high performance, team cohesion, individual development in football across positions, you can't look at anything in silo. You have to look at the whole organization, the whole team, the whole individual. So I don't think footballers are behind the curve in terms of no one's really at this point, from my experience, looking at that holistic profile of everybody. People are still working and analyzing things in silo. So when we talk about AI and this great push in sport across it, some of it's excellent, but it's still working in that silo point. And I think what football does that might be somewhat unique than other sports is when I look at what they're doing, often it's quite well hidden. So that isn't a great thing. But from the internal sporting organisation, they're doing some really good things that no one is really fully aware of. So whilst they might be seen as perhaps coming to the party late, I wouldn't be surprised when you're looking at the sort of level of sports intelligence that's going on in football. It's actually very, very high level data driven decisions, and some things around AI will be adopted, but the general public or people outside of that space may not be fully aware of what's going on because no one's singing and dancing about it. But at the same time, those in football that might be thinking, oh, are we behind the curve again? When we're talking and looking at adopting aspects of AI and machine learning, data intelligence, data understanding and insights with other organizations, there'd be some very, very high profile orgs that I think people would be very surprised about the level of data understanding that they have. Thousands and thousands of data points, but not a lot really going on with that data. Certainly not across the whole holistic piece around high performance. So I think everyone in sport, all high organizations are probably behind the curve in what AI, machine learning, data analysis can do. And maybe football are coming to the table a little later than others to try and adopt it, but no one's really solved the challenge of big data, decoding that data and moving away from silo analysis yet in sport in general, as far as we can see as an organization who we're working for.
I mean, jumping on the high performance part there that you mentioned, how is data driving high performance in your experience? We all, most of us know about AI and, you know, the Moneyball kind of way of recruitment. And I know you're going to talk about talent development in a little while, but talk about the nitty gritty. How is actually data, the numbers, the crunching of it, the analysis of it, how is that driving high performance in your experience?
Data's everywhere, Lee, completely. And it's not going away. So it's driving decisions. In fact, if you look at it in terms of data, it's just getting bigger. There's new tech coming out every day. And each one generates hundreds, if not thousands, of data points on the athlete or the team. And that is changing the high performance landscape. The discussion now typically comes back to data at some point. There's a whole movement around digitization of sport. So data is clearly essential. But what it's doing when you look at high performance, it brings not only benefits, which we'll get into no doubt on this, but huge challenges that I don't believe we've chatted about, in terms of the last question, I guess, in terms of no one's really an athlete monitoring system or high performance pathway solved it yet. And that's data still being analyzed in silo. And because it's getting bigger and bigger, understanding which data are more important relative to others just isn't being delivered. So that means while high performance and sort of talent development systems aren't removing data streams or using tech to become more efficient, they're adopting a rhetoric of more data is better. And that creates more noise. But it's not all doom and gloom in that. If you look at data and how it's shaped sport recently in terms of when it's analysed in the right way, it creates evidence for change and enhancement. You know, there's evidence in loads of different silos in that, in terms of performance clothing development, performance monitoring that happens. You know, there's so much stuff that happens in football and games in general where you immediately, as the match is going on, you look at tackles made, tackles missed, you know, the likelihood of a shot going in, the speed that the ball is traveling at. And all that data is rich information for a high performance organization. It's just cutting through. What is it that's actually delivering for us? And in terms of fan engagement and revenue, the amount of data that's out there and what that's doing to high performance is great. The more fan engagement you get, the more revenue you get, the more high performance you can become because you've got more resources at your fingertips. So that, you know, data is essential in that. But the challenge is working out which data is most important and how to ensure the complete picture of high performance is considered when you start talking about human potential and high performance and talent development. If you think about it, most of the data is about a metric on a performance that we see. But that, when you're looking at the human, there's everything around them that's going on, from family support that's happening, right down to what they've eaten, what they've done, what they've slept last night, and then how that is going to deliver performance on the field. So it's this holistic picture that you need to look at. And that's where that data is. The more noise you have in the data, the more challenging that becomes from a high performance point of view.
So do we all need to jump on that bus, that whatever mode of transport for the ride, or is there kind of a bit of a scare that if we don't, some of us will get left behind? Is it something where AI has got a place, or is it just something that is ultimately at some point, you mentioned it being the navigator rather than the passenger, is it got that potential to take over and we need to embrace it, or is it still going to be selective depending on that organization, do you think?
I don't think it'll ever take over. You have to jump on the bandwagon, I think, that's the wrong term, actually. You have to embrace AI technology to answer and use data effectively. Okay. Because if those that do will get real decision intelligence that will then act as an incredibly clever head in the decision room, if you want, or the coaching room, the staff room, whatever that looks like, that you can always close that decision down. You can always close the clever computer up and say, let's just do what we're going to do here. But without that in the room that is able to look at all of your data at one time, make sense of it and visualize it, humans cannot do that. It doesn't matter we can have that discussion. It doesn't matter what level of analysis or stats expert you're at. You cannot look at all possible interactions of all possible data that will influence one individual, let alone a whole team. You can't do it, whereas AI can. And there's some systems that enable us to do that. And you can use that to your advantage. And where it won't be the driver is you can ignore it in as a group of people and go, that's a great bit of information we've got. I'm just not going to do anything about it. So I don't think it will ever be the driver of it. But what I am doing there is I'm assuming that we are removing capitalism from the picture. So if we just ignore financial models and we assume that they're not determined staffing strategy, perhaps when it comes to supporting human development performance, then I will assume that it won't make humans obsolete because of the importance of relationships when implementing change and trying to implement behavior in high level support at sport. You have to have that one-to-one relationship. You can't have a computer tell someone what to do. It just, people don't buy into that. And sport's about relationships. That's what people get into it for. They're passionate because it develops them as an individual. And then they go on that journey of, actually, I can do this for a living. This is like something I can make money out of. No one really starts their journey in sport on the basis of, I'm going to be a pro athlete. Or very few people, the kids. And it brings them something special that's about that human interaction and relationship. So to remove that, I don't think will happen. Whereas you might be seeing that, and that's perhaps some of the worry about why people might be a bit reluctant to adopt AI in sport, in that, oh, this will replace me like a driverless car or like AI running a factory. I think those that adopt it early on and see that this is a very clever tool in the room, a very clever head, but it isn't going to replace me. It's just going to mean that what I can do will be more effective, more efficient, and I'll be able to deliver high performance and actually act on things and data that I know is making a difference, because it's removing the noise that we have around huge amounts of data in high performance.
Beautiful put, love that. And we've teased our listeners long enough now. Tell us about specifically around the Talent Pathway ID, which, you know, you're co-founder of. What is it you're doing to develop athletes of the future?
So Talent Pathway ID, it's all about maximizing human potential. And we do that by a bit what we've discussed about. Well, that's exactly what we do. We solve the challenges of big data through understanding that data and removing the limitations of analyzing data streams in silo. So we offer a software really to support individuals, teams, coaches, organizations to do three things. We identify which data is the most important for them, mm-hmm. and their questions. And that might be high performance. It might be remaining injury free. It might be about getting transition through the pathway, 15 to 16, 16 to 17, differences between sex and gender. It doesn't matter what the question is. What we're able to do is identify which data is most important from all that they've got to answer that question. And then we use sort of ongoing data collection, centralization of data, and sophisticated analysis and visualizations of data and insights. And they're presented in real time. So that's sort of a development piece around it, if you will. And that provides unprecedented and bespoke evidence-driven decision intelligence that develops human potential. And as I said, you don't have to do anything with it if you don't want to, but it's using that data analysis piece to as an ongoing bit to get around the challenges of big data. So we can identify which data is most important, which helps you identify talent and assist with selection. And then to develop that talent, it uses ongoing data collection to say, right, of all your data, this is what's working best for this individual. So this is what you should be doing to enable them to get the best potential they can. And that will be different for each person, because each person is an individual, and what creates them as a high level performer will be unique, both within the sport and across sports. And then all those insights enable you to deliver competitive advantage. And the beauty of it, what we're doing is we work, because the data is analyzed in real time, then what we end up doing is it delivers that competitive advantage in step as changes with the organization strategy might change, rules in the game change, personnel even in the organization drop out and someone else comes in. In terms of that cultural side of stuff, when things change, it can make a huge impact. But because this is done in real time, it will look at what that change is doing to high performance and enable you to make changes and tell you what you ought to change based on that. And it will do that whether you're the individual or the team changes. So it can be used as an early warning sign as well as a high performance predictor, because it's doing it in real time.
So give us an example then of some of the patterns, the data patterns that you look for in predicting that elite performance, or being able to identify that talent, or be able to want to develop that talent. So you talked about some of the pathways from 15, 16 to 17. Is there, and you talked about not wanting to work in silos. So is there a pattern of data you're looking for that predicts this high performance, or is it not quite as easy as that?
Yeah, sort of. This is where I think when you're, and it's slightly off topic here, but it is important actually, is when an organization is looking to use an athlete monitoring system, the first thing that you ought to be asking yourself is this designed by a software engineer, or is this led and being led and driven by someone that is an expert in this area of talent development and high performance? And the two different, very different outcomes there. A software engineer can provide you with a solution, but when you're modeling and using AI, the solution's only as good as the data you put into it. Okay. So you have to have a really solid theoretical framework of why you're putting data in to understand the patterns that you were talking about. So we will collect aspects in with our clients. We work shoulder to shoulder them. We'll scaffold around data that they've already got. And often in organizations, most of that will be relevant data. It's just they're not able to look at which is relatively more important than others, because things are looked in silo. And at the moment, there's no athlete monitoring system out there apart from, and I'm being biased, apart from Talent Pathway ID that do this. So what we end up, what you end up with is you need to be putting the right data in. So our framework from a talent development point of view is based on 20 to 25 plus years of research in the space, where people in the company, myself as COO, and the chief technical officer, both have PhDs in talent development and high performance expertise, and publish regularly in those areas. So we use that understanding to look at what is it that you need to become a high performer. And then every bit of data that we suggest and scaffold around existing data is asked because somebody somewhere in the literature has suggested that this is important on its own, typically because they're analyzed in silo, this is important for high performance. So when you start piecing that together, you can start to look at patterns that we know at some point should predict that development. So I'll give you some examples. Demographics are important. You'll be familiar with the relative age effect in football. Mm-hmm. No doubt. A bias with selection, and there's lots of stuff going on about that. One of them is biobanding. So if you collect data on biobanding, is there an unconscious bias associated with that? So are we now putting people into experiences based on their physiology that might mean a 9-year-old, because they're big and strong, is partnered with a group of people that are 12, but that 9-year-old doesn't have the mental capacity or the understanding of teamwork, relationship building that a 12-year-old has, so then they're at a disadvantage. So you need to collect psychological data. You need to collect demographic data about whether they have a sibling effect that might give them those sorts of experiences. What did the parents do? What support do they offer? Were they ex-athletes? Do they value sport? And there's a whole wealth about demographics that we collect. And each one of the things that we put into that are driven by the literature of somebody somewhere said this important. Town size. Have you got infrastructure around you? Where do you come from?
Sorry. Yeah, so that wealth of all that data, and you talked about, you know, some real deep delving pieces of individual data that you're trying to paint that picture. Where does that stop, or does that never stop? You're just literally looking for even more information, even more data, you know, the person, the technical stuff, the tactical stuff. Is it there's never too much data, or where is there a limit of where you go, well, actually, now it's probably going to muddy the waters a little bit, we're probably going to be overwhelmed with a lot of this, and it's not really going to make us have that informed decision? Or is there just no limit at all, and you can just delve deep as much as you want?
Yeah, it's the latter really, and there's two reasons why that you can keep adding to that. But and really, the rationale behind that is you keep adding to it because what we do as a unique system is we can put unlimited amount of data into it. But what we do is we then look at, for your question of interest, let's say the question is, and we talk about talent development, and let's say that we're looking at transition through the pathway. So who is it that the age 12 is then going to be by age 16, the higher performer in the academy? So we're looking at that transition period, and we'll collect aspects we chat about around demographics. We only need to collect that once because, you know, you're only born in one place. You're only born in one date. Your parents only did one thing. But we'll also collect things about, so what sports did you do then? Have you got any donor sports? Did you do lots of sports? Have you played lots of competition? We add all that in. And then you've got milestones around your sporting development. What's the highest level of football you played at 12? Did you play up an age group? Did you get significant performances? So we have all these sort of off-the-shelf measures that are validated that we can put in and scaffold around existing data. And then you can ask things that are about football specific. What experience and what practice do you do? How much representational practice you do? For those listeners, I'm sure they'll be aware of that. And you might well have, you know, coaches listening in on this that, you know, that's that sort of context specific practice, specificity. There's loads of different terminologies for it. Essentially, you don't learn to kick a football by playing tennis, right? So what practice have you got that is specific to your game, that's about you're losing by 2 goals? What are you going to do about it? How are we going to get that back? What pressure training have you been given? What areas around feedback have you delivered? Is it prescriptive? Is it more constraints-based in process? We've got whole methods around that. And then what you end up doing is when you collect all that data and you're doing it in regular drip feeding points, in addition to game competition data that's out there that and GPS data that clubs will have, you put all that into one place. And then you're starting to get this holistic picture of the athlete. Now, we also monitor health and well-being and sleep, but that's a whole other topic. But if you collect those things as well, and you've got this holistic profile of this player, and even at a team level, how are they interacting with others? Then what you end up doing with our AI and machine learning system is that you can identify, of all of those factors, what are the most important to deliver that transition. Remember, that was our question, that transition. And we've got examples. You know, we did this with British Canoeing, their super elite profiled athletes. and we collected over 1,000 variables off each one. So we had just over 25,000 data points that got pulled in, and we were able to reduce that down to just 7 key factors that delivered high performance with 83% accuracy. So for every 100 players that we put into the system, if we just got the data on those 7 factors, our system could say 83 out of 100 times that person is going to be high performing or that person isn't. And then what we do, and this is the important bit as well, is all the other factors that aren't in that model, they are going to be important, but just less so. So we rank each one of those in order of their relative importance so that the sport can dive into what might be important for their silo. So the psychologist, let's say no psychology factors come out. The psychologist lifestyle advisor goes, what, so my job's useless? I just don't buy that. So we say, no, it's just not as important as some of these factors. So they can go into the online software, click in their silo, click all of the different variables we collected in psychology or they have, and see which of those is relatively more important. And also at what stage in the athlete's development it's important. So we can put insights into things like at age 14, how much pressure training or anxiety-based training. Now, those might be dangerous words. They're safe anxiety training. So how much training have you had that might be context-specific about match day? And we could say, if you've had 40 or 50% of your training in this period of the season, you're 3 times more likely to be successful. It's not in the original model, but it gives you really good insight about what should we do as an organization at different ages and stages and strategy. And you can keep adding data to it. And the more data you get, the more useful or predictive and the more that model will learn. But what it won't do is add more noise to the system, because what the model is constantly trying to do is work out of all of your data, what is the most important, what is the least amount of data we can use to get you the best predictive model. Remember, we said that percentage at 82%. We've got other examples in cricket. We've got examples in that we with the ECB, examples we've used of weightlifting Wales, where we can get that factor to 99%. And that's because we've had ongoing data for 2 or 3 years in that, in particularly weightlifting Wales. We've had ongoing data for 2 or 3 years with them that they've been adding into our system. And then what you end up with is a model, a predictive model that's based on their population there. But this is what's working for them. And this is what's changing that the sort of process for them. So they can add as much data as they want in. And a great example is here, they do lots and lots and lots of physiology testing. You can imagine that. It's a strength and conditioning based sport. But when they keep pulling that data in, the system is able to say, right, of all these tests that you do, there's only one that you need to do to predict high performance and who's going to transition. So get rid of all the others and just do this one. Because it doesn't matter how much data you're putting in, nobody is yet coming into the system that is being highlighted by another test. So this should be your one talent development test or talent ID test. And then what the system does is we work with them to then do a deeper dive into that test. So that was, and we're getting out of football, but that test was the overhead squat. Okay. So then you work with the coaches and the organization to go, right, if the overhead squat's important, let's use the AI and the data to look at which parts of the overhead squat are important. So we dive in and the system does that. And, you know, it's ankle flexion, depth of squat and upright torso angle. And if you get the combination of those right, with the right depth, the right flexion, the right angle of the torso, then you're more likely to be a higher performer. And that's driven by the data. It's not coach-led, it's not bias, it's data-driven from that. And then what that does, where we're saying, is AI going to replace people? No, it definitely isn't, because what the coach can do can make hypothetical changes to those 3 different factors that the model has said is most important to deliver performance on that test. And then they can say, well, if we make these changes to, I don't know, let's say Gav Lawrence is here, that's me. Let's give him a bit more of a squat depth, better ankle flexion and less upright torso. And then you can model what's that going to do to his performance. And so it just gives you a decision head. Now, you don't have to do that. It just says that would be the best thing to do for them. And then there's the whole piece around it where someone sits in with the lifestyle advisor and says, well, they haven't got time to do that. There's no way. Or they've got an ankle problem. The physio comes in and said they're never going to get that flexibility. So you can hypothetically change something else. And the more data you feed it, the richer the insights become. Or at the same time, get efficiency, because you'll start to say, okay, you've just bought some new tech. For example, we're all wearing these new nice smartwatches. How often do they have to do it? What do we do? And you pull that intervention or that new little innovation that you've got into the system. If it starts to become important and more important than anything else you're doing, it will start to become and start to appear in that overall predictive model. If it doesn't appear in there, it's not adding anything to your system. You may as well not spend the money on it. So it gives you real decision intelligence with that. And that's why you have to look at that holistic model. If you don't drive it with evidence-based data and holistic model, you just add more noise and you never know what should we get rid of. And I'm guessing you're probably sitting there thinking this, Lee, if you look back historically, when have you ever dropped something from a talent pathway or from a development point of view? We're not going to do that anymore. We're going to do this instead. Typically, the conversation says we're going to add this to what we're already doing, because what we're doing is great. But if we add this, we'll be even greater. And it just starts to become more and more challenging there has to become a point where if we want to be efficient and really drive performance, we need to actually remove something from the system. And then everyone is always a bit edgy and a bit twitchy and a bit uncomfortable about doing that, because you don't know what the impact on performance will be. And that's where this system, the more data you feed it, don't matter, because it will just say it's not as important as this bit of data. So keep adding it in and we'll just keep throwing back the answer of it's not actually doing anything. You can keep putting it in, but the decision might be to not bother with that data, to not bother with driving that and replacing it with something else. And if that is more important, the model, that predictive model, will start to throw that up and say, right, this is something that is driving performance. And that's something that you want to keep pushing in that direction of.
I mean, to be honest with you, Gavin, I'm sat here thinking, I'm astounded by the level of detail already. And this is just, some snippet of examples you're giving, in terms of different sports. And I'm just sat here thinking, wow, the level of depth you can go into is just astronomical. And yeah, something that is certainly food for thought for me, as I'm sure it will be for our listeners. And I know you give great examples there from cricket, weightlifting, canoeing, kind of trying to narrow it down now and bring it back towards football and, academy football, developing the talent within our sport. In your opinion, and maybe you've got examples of this, how can players tap into this technology and the use of AI in their own development? So maybe, whether it's in collaboration with coaches or from, away from that, have you got examples of that, or how do you see the future of players interacting and using this technology and the use of AI to be able to continue their development, consistently improve their performances?
Yeah, that's a great question. In terms of players using it, there's a big push, and it won't, it's definitely new within football, is they own their own data. So that's the big challenge at the moment, is that who owns the data? If someone's profiteering off my data, then I don't want them to, right? There's that sort of challenge around it. So what we do as a system is the individual gets a dashboard, if you will, a software dashboard of what's working for them, so they can see their own data.
Okay.
The coach then can see the aggregated data across all the players that they're working with. And if the player wants to, they can identify through GDPR, they can identify themselves to the coach. And now there may be contracts where they have to do that, but let's assume there isn't. So then the coach can see the aggregated data is what working, but the athlete can see you know, the level of detail we've just talked about, if that data is getting pulled in or they're inputting their own data through that, we can API with tech wearing watches they've got, et cetera, then they can see what is it that's really working for me, for my goals, for me being the best player I can be. Mm-hmm. And they get automated reports about that and little nudges about things they want to do. And in the football space, that will be phenomenal for people that are decentralized. So I'd like to get into an academy. I'm in there, but I play a lot of my football and stuff outside of that. I'm training outside of it. What are you doing outside of it that's influencing your performance that can make you a better person in the academy? And if someone wants to get into an academy, how do I get in there? What am I? I haven't got that hands-on coach next to me that's the world-leading coach that's driving me forward. But this is what this could do. It can act as that to give you really good understanding of all the things you're doing. What is it that's leading to your success? Right down to sleep level. You didn't sleep very much. So you need to be getting this much sleep if you want to get the performance levels you've got. When you perform well, you know, it'll look at things like when you perform well, what's the level of sleep that you had? What was your diet like? If you put that in, what training did you do? How often did you do that out? Did you have breaks? So we build all that in. And then you can say, when you perform at your best, this is what the things that are delivering that performance for you on an individual level. So footballers that adopt that will undoubtedly have an individual competitive advantage. And then sports we're working with outside of football, we're seeing that already. Within football, what's really neat, we've got an NDA. So I'm just going to say a top European flight football club.
Yeah.
And this is what this is a quote from their analyst, if I get this right. It's not verbatim, but they've worked in football for a number of years and used several systems, something along these lines. But you guys at TPID, and it's brilliant quote, crack me up, are like Santa Claus. Whenever I ask a question, you deliver me presents every time. The difference is that we get that immediately rather than once a year. So in terms of how that might be changing football, if you think, and this is a sports analyst, this is their job. He said, typically, when I want to answer a question, someone comes in and says, right, we've got a new shift. Everybody needs to have a body fat percentage of 13%. And they go, why? Because that's what someone somewhere has said. I've read it somewhere. That's what we're aiming for. So he said, well, if we go into the system, I can look at what's the relative importance of that. And is that essential? They can model it and go, you know what? It makes no difference to people's performance. Everybody is under this percentage. It doesn't matter if we get them lower or as long as they're under 15, which everybody is, that's all we need. So let's move away from that rhetoric and let's move into something else. So that's an example of an early adopter getting that competitive advantage or that decision head in the room. And how it will shape football is it will do exactly what it we're doing with all the other sports, in that it will enable you to look at what is working most effectively in your system, in your pathway. And you only have to see it if you look at it in terms of what clubs have adopted Zone 7, you know, the injury prevention injury monitoring, if you will, system, which uses AI, but only in that silo. Now, that's not a bad thing. They're doing what they do phenomenally well and then using similar sort of stuff to what, you know, methods in terms of what I've discussed today in that machine learning side of stuff and AI. But those clubs that have adopted that keep players thriving, keep players in that high level performance domain without overtraining them, overloading them to a higher level, which delivers competitive advantage. If you picture that across, imagine you could do that with developing your players in your academy to either play for you or sell them for big bucks so you can buy other people. If you could develop more people effectively in the academy, that would deliver huge performance gains later on if you look at that long-term picture. That's everyone's goal, right? If we can get this person through the academy and sell them for X money or keep them and deliver high performances, we've done a good job. And I looked and read somewhere that, and this is relative, you know, this is 2017 data when I looked at this, but I think less than 1% of academy players in the UK, in the Premier League, then go on to play and get those contracts. So that's a not a talent waste, that's the wrong word. Talent loss, people that may no longer be in that high performance place and play at a different level, or just become a, you know, someone that participates in sport. That's fine. That's done its job. It's not got to get everybody to a high level performer. It's got to get everyone fitter and healthier if we look at that bigger picture. But the more people that you get through your academy that come out the other end as a high level footballer, you know, the better that academy has worked. And that's what this will do. And you could use it, as I said, at an individual level. You can use it as a coaching level. So a whole team level to look at how performance is across the team and what the actual system is doing to develop those players. And you can use it, and you know, I've had discussions across international football here where you use it for more of a strategy piece. How do you widen the participation pool? Why are you, or are you, you know, when you can identify patterns in the data early on, are you getting players from certain age groups, certain demographics, certain backgrounds, certain areas, geographical locations that you're missing a trick? You could widen your talent pool if you just did, you know, that you aren't aware of that because you haven't looked at it. Is what is predicting people that come to our, you know, your question is who comes into the academy? And then we look at that data and go, well, this is what's predicting who comes into your academy. And the question is entry into academy and not who's a high performer. You can use it thousands of different levels. It's the same principle across it. And that's why that early adoption, it is mind-blowing. People are reluctant of it and you think, oh, it's doing so much. But those people that are using the system start using it slowly and then start going, could it do this? Yes. Could it do that, do you think? And then it suddenly starts to dawn on them how powerful that this system is and how it should really change that level of football development and sport in general, really. But you know, we're football specific in this respect.
And using the stats that you just mentioned there from a football specific perspective, you know, the less than 1%, and then you use the 82-83% of the success rate, you know, taking 25,000 data points into 7 key performance indicators. Those are polar opposites.
Yeah.
Why do you think that football clubs, academies aren't using what potentially could be at their disposal to narrow that gap, to bring that 1%, 2% into double digits or even close to the 50%? Is it a bit of a fear factor that they think that AI is going to take over and it's going to take out the human element? Is it a financial thing? Is it user interface that potentially clubs, academies are going to be purchasing this platform from you and maybe not know how to fully utilize it and be able to make it as if those decision-making processes more efficient? What do you feel it is, or do you have some experiences where you see a gap where football clubs aren't using it for these reasons, and if only we could get in there, we could massively bring up your percentage of success?
I think the first bit is this is new. So I was under the impression that some high level organizations, particularly football, that are sort of asset rich, if you will, would have these sorts of systems. Now they have athlete monitoring systems, but they are only looking at things in silo. And those typically just produce, and I am doing them a disservice here, but I'm trying to look at the differences between what we've chatted about, a very nice static graphic picture on a dashboard somewhere. They're not bespoke. They don't enable the end user organization to shape the question of interest they want, to put in thousands of unlimited data points across the whole piece. And it goes back to the point earlier on where they're not evidence-based. The software engineers that have designed them, they're not world-leading academics that you need to work alongside and then allow the world-leading football club to adopt it and to shape how that needs to work for them. And Talent Pathway ID is pretty much one of the only people that are doing this. And we haven't been around for long. You know, we formed 2 years ago. Within the first year, won the Sports Technology Award, Global Award for Best Athlete Coaching Performance Technology. So that was last year. And in that time, we've grown pretty much exponentially in terms of the clubs that we're working with, the organisations. It's hard to get into football. That's the first bit. We have just been, well, it works slowly, not just. We have been, this time, May last year, we won a challenge to work with, I won't name them, but with a huge football governing body, on a challenge around injury. So when that starts, then I think the production of what we will be able to do with our system for understanding injury data and that side of stuff will get eyes on us a bit more. But it will come. So the one thing is, I think there's probably a bit of fear around AI. There's probably a bit of fear around, we've had an athlete monitoring system before, it doesn't really work, and that's fine, but you haven't had one that maybe is at this level. And when we are talking to organisations, and we've had lots of conversations with football clubs that are keen and have seen this sort of stuff, and organisations, high-profile organisations in sports across the globe, that are genuinely saying, you're like 5 years ahead of the competition. People are talking about holistic profiling, but not really understanding how it what it can do. And your stuff is already doing this, and is already, when we put data in, you're giving us real-time results there and then, and it's starting to deliver stuff, and we get to shape it. It can be bespoke to us. It's not an off-the-shelf thing. So I think that's changing, and the biggest bit, I think, where we'll see, and football will get learnings from it, or at least start to go, oh, actually, yeah, it's working in there. The esports space is really adopted this for us.
Yeah.
And has really seen changes in what their athletes are doing, their performance metrics around that, how it's shaping what they do from a behavioral change point of view. And then some of the governing bodies that we're working with that aren't football, you know, they are high level profile sports, but they're Olympic sports, if you will, that they're trying to win those medals, are also seeing that this system is actually really delivering results for us. We don't have to use it if we don't want to, so we're not afraid of it anymore. We're using it for our benefit. And if we want to add something to the system, then we can give you a buzz. We have a chat, and you can start to see that this is not an off the shelf. We go, hey, you need that. We'll build that into the system for you. Give us a couple of days and it will start to function for you. So they're starting to see that this is powerful. When those things start to come out and people's, you know, when we drive more traction around those sort of things, then I think football will jump on board. It'll take one club. Genuinely, it'll take one club to jump on board and say, look, this is great. And then I think then people go, oh God, we need a bit of that. We need some of that. That's all it will take. And there are some really good ongoing discussions that we've got at the moment. And it just takes longer. In the newer sports and the sports where budget isn't as big, then we get to talk to the person, the CEO, we get to talk to the Greek, if you will, the person that holds the purse string straight off the bat. And then they go, yep, this sounds great. Let's roll this out. Whereas when you're talking about working with a world leading football club that's rich, you got to get, first of all, you talk to the academy. Well, you talk to the coach, who might go, I'm a bit fearful of this. I'm not going to tell the academy director about it. Or the academy director goes, yeah, it sounds good. I just need to run it past the board. They meet every quarter. They've got lots of other stuff going on. And then eventually you get a meeting with someone that says, yeah, great. We'll have a longer discussion about this, because it's not high priority. It's simple as that. And there's a lot more gatekeepers to get through. And I think when you're working with sports that are more risk takers or need that competitive advantage and think we are struggling and we need to develop something, and digitization is something we're not great at, then I think you'll get those adopters, and then I think you'll start to see this roll out across a number of clubs, and if not all clubs. 2 or 3 years, I'll be amazed if a club hasn't got some form of AI system that's helping them understand data.
I totally agree. It's going to take one club to break through the ceiling, and then what tends to always happen in football is then, as you said, everybody else follows. I mean, going from an organisational piece from a club perspective back to the individual, the player, not wanting to put too much pressure on you here and break because you've, you know, you've put the case forward excellently so far. Has AI and this digitisation got the ability to predict what the player of the future will look like? And when I ask that question, I'm talking about, you know, in terms of the change of that famous number 10 position within football. I'm talking about, you've got Haaland now at City, who Jamie Carragher called him a freak in the nicest possible way, of we've not seen the like before from probably my generation of watching football. You played with two up front and there was partnerships, your Sutton, Shearers and the like. And now you don't see that. It's a false nine. It's a front three. Do you, I mean, I suppose two parts. A, do you feel that your system or AI in general will be able to predict the player of the future and recognise these patterns? And B, what do you think that will look like? What do you think is the next trend, the next curve, the next pattern of data that you're seeing that's painting that picture of going, we see a shift in this position or this style of play or this type of recruitment or the way that athletes are being developed? You talked quite a lot about holistically. Is that the next big thing where, you know, we're going away from the technical, tactical driven player and the athlete, you know, he's the Ronaldo's, and we're wanting more personable players, more decision makers on the pitch? What do you see and what do you feel that AI can bring to that table to be able to predict the player of the future potentially?
That's a really good question, and I don't want to be slopey shouldered, but it's a really, really tough question. And I think I'll be brutally honest, is I think a lot of the predictive power of what is going to be in the future is driven by what is currently there. And you'll get a breakthrough. You know, you talked about Haaland, you get a similar thing, you know, think about sprinting. Sprinters can't be tall, and then you had Bolt and went, oh my God, what's that about?
Yeah, true.
And you see this, you know, bring it back to football, you see the same thing now in terms of, so what we do to help with prediction is we do often do a bottom, top down, bottom up approach. So that by that, the top down approach is, there's loads of data on Haaland. We could get some aspects around that. We can make an understanding, a really good holistic profile map of what he looked like, including if we had access to it and he was willing to, what did he do? His demographics, family values, milestones, journeys through sport, how many sports has he done, all the stuff we've talked about previously. And then you get this really nice holistic picture about him. And then in order to predict the development, everyone, in essence, if we put that into the system, then we could map players. At 15, Haaland was doing. At 9, he looked like, you know, so we got that data. We got some understanding of that. And then you could look for nearest neighbours. And that's one of the things we do. So succession modelling, you might call it. We haven't talked about it yet. It's great that we fit it into here in terms of when this person shifts out of that team, this is the best person to replace them based on their holistic profile and this nearest neighbour's holistic profile. Now, the coach may not have seen it. I've got examples in other sports with that, but where that is the nearest person to it. So this is the person you might want to develop to shift into that position. And that's where that predictive power comes in. The challenge around that of, is AI going to lead that? Is it's led by what is the current best people, if that makes sense. So we're all now talking about Haaland. So we're going to try, how can we develop the next Haaland? How can we, when really, if you looked at Messi, you go, well, how can we develop the next Messi? They're completely different people, different players. But it depends on who's in that space. And then occasionally you'll get someone that will break through, that will be a complete disruptor. And the beauty of where the AI will come in, if people have adopted it and got longitudinal understanding of data sets of people have moved through pathways, then you'll be able to identify people of, bloody hell, this person's very similar. What are we doing? What level of team are they in? What are they looking at? This is a disruptor. This person's got a potential to be. So it'll start to make those predictions for you. What that player looks like, don't know. It's a, if I looked at what we understand outside of football, that's common across sports, is the formative experiences are driving their successes later on. So, and this isn't new, not necessarily, but one of them was mother's involvement in sport was massive, not necessarily the father's. They had a sibling that was involved in sport, not necessarily the same sport, and they play multiple sports early on in their life. So if we just took those three from predictive patterns that's similar across multiple sports we work with, is family importance around sport is what's helping them become a high level performer. And that might be as simple as, you know, when that data came out, I spoke to my wife and was saying, look, we've got loads of stuff on this, but the literature, well, what do you think about that? I'm racking my brains here. And she just went, it's simple. She said, you're quite lazy. I said, what? she said, you come back to the office and then the kids need to go to they're lucky enough, they need to go to the local academy, football academy. If you don't drive them because you're back late, and she used to be a great netball player. If I wasn't interested in sport, they wouldn't go because I would not drive them. I would say, well, we're doing what mommy wants to do. Mommy wants to go to the art club, or we're going to do music, or we're going to do this. She said, because we've got both of us in this family that are in, see that sport is important and value it, then it's not a sacrifice to take them every Saturday and Sunday and drive a long way. It's not a problem that we're juggling them and tagging in and out on the evenings of, right, I'll take them swimming, you take them to that, and then we go over here. All of that is just normal. And then when the weather's bad on a Saturday and they go, oh, don't know if I want to go, it's important. So you're coming. We're taking you because there's learnings that are going on in here. It's important to get your kit ready. You know, so it's important to put things away properly and clean your boots and get prepared for that sport. Now, people don't consider that as high performance till we put all the data in and went, oh, yeah, of course, that makes perfect sense. Who drives them as a kid? Who decides whether they're going to pay for them to go there? Who sits around the dinner table when things are tough and discusses it? How did it go today? Think of critical reflection. What practice are you doing? What could you do to get better? If you don't, not interested in sport, how was football today? Yeah, great. Brilliant. Right. Come on. Help us with this now. They're different. So those sorts of things will be predictive of high performance, and they can be shaped at the grassroots level, but they're often not shaped because people don't necessarily come to those academies until a bit later on when those things have already happened. And there's lots of other examples where mental resilience and toughness is important, regardless of which sport you're in, and just being able to be motivated to train. And that sometimes, and to some extent, probably also stems from what we've talked about those family value predictions. You're instilling it into training is important. Training is, if you want to be good at what you're going to do, you've got to put the hours in. You've got to be able to do that. And you see that in Olympic sports, people that are very good at one sport and then they shift and they win medals in other sports. I mean, how? Well, I just know how to work hard. I know how to train. I know how things are difficult. So predicting the next talent will probably be quite broad in terms of general things that are useful for expertise. And that will be my poor non-AI prediction around that, my human prediction around it. So there'll be errors in it. But when sports start to use this and they're collecting longitudinal data, a little bit like, you know, I was talking about weightlifting Wales earlier on, they've been collecting it for a while, and we've got other sports, canoe whales are doing it as well. Then it will start to make these predictions. And in 3, 4, 5 years, it will start to say this person is likely to be a high performer because we've seen a lot of people go through the system and they've all had this, and this person matches it. This is someone that this is starting to predict talent. And will it ever replace people in the room? No, I don't think it will. There's a human relationship associated with it. And in order to get the best out of people, it can't be machine led. It has to just be an effective decision maker in the room. but it won't replace gut feel. It won't replace the wealth of experience that a coach has got. It will just either highlight things that they might have not been looking for, or it will support some of those rhetorics that they have at this point. 10 years? Don't know. 15 years? I just think we're clever enough of humans that we might go, yeah, this can do the job that I can do. I'm just a bit reluctant to let everyone know about that. And maybe it will take longer to, it'll just take longer to come in. Otherwise, we'll just be right. We'll just be void, right? All humans will be. And I just don't think that's never going to happen, because we're going to make sure it doesn't as a group. You know, that's what we want to survive, right? And this is just a useful tool in the room.
That's a refreshing thought, because I quite like my job, so I'd like to keep it and not have
exactly
to take over me. But we like to finish the podcast on basically giving you the ownership over how you leave your episode, and hopefully give, you know, a lasting message to the listeners. I think, you know, the picture you've been painting over the last 60 minutes or so, I think, has been brilliant. And I would like to give you this opportunity, this last opportunity, final opportunity to be a case for the defence in terms of AI technology. As we've mentioned a few times through here, sometimes a bit of a fear factor of not wanting people, you know, not wanting to use it, through that fear factor of taking over, replacing jobs, replacing that human being. So I want to finish this episode and give you the opportunity to plead a case for the defence on, you know, why we should be using AI and technology in sport to predict and develop talent.
Yeah, nice. I should have thought this one through. Yeah. AI is scary. That's the first bit. I think people are very scared of AI. And I think we're rightful to be in some places, but not in this space. And some of you will instantly get what Talent Pathway ID are doing and why we're using AI. And some of you won't. And that's absolutely fine. But I guarantee that those who don't adopt AI and embrace it will be left behind the competitors that do. It's as simple as that. It's not going anywhere. It's only getting better. And if you fail to adopt the right system, then you will be left behind.
Beautiful. Can't put it as more perfect as that. And I think that's the beauty of all this that we've just been talking about over the last 60 minutes about, you know, the 25,000 and maybe even more data points, but it simplistically comes down to that, is potentially if we don't embrace it, we will get left behind. As you said, it'll take that one club to take it on board, to risk it, to try something new, to do something different, and then the rest will follow. And I would like to think that would be the fear that would drive people to use it, to think we don't want to get left behind. So yeah, I'm as excited as you are, is, you know, where this is now going to sit within, like you said, the next 5, 10, 15 years. I think the possibilities are truly endless. And I want to thank you for your time, Gavin. I know you're a busy guy, and I know you've been doing a few back-to-back video calls as well. So I want to thank you on behalf of myself and our listeners for giving up your time to, you know, put more than a defence forward for the use of AI and technology in sport. And I suppose watch your space, because who knows what it's going to predict? Who knows how it's going to develop the player of the future? And I'm sure you'll be at the forefront of that. So thank you, Gavin.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And that brings us to the end of today's episode, focused on the use of technology and introduction of artificial intelligence into the world of academy football. I hope you found our discussion valuable and gained some insightful tips to enhance your journey in the beautiful game. Before we wrap up, let's quickly recap the key points we covered. Firstly, we explored the role of AI as a navigator rather than a driver. Our guest expert, Dr. Gavin Lawrence, emphasized the importance of decision-making in AI systems. While it can provide valuable insights and assist in decision-making processes, it should not be relied upon as the sole decision-maker. It's crucial to understand that humans are ultimately responsible for the outcomes and should use AI as a tool rather than completely handing over control. Next, we delved into the concept that data cannot be analysed in silos. Data is everywhere, and by integrating data from different sources and perspectives, we gain a more comprehensive understanding of the world. Collaboration and cross-disciplinary approaches are key to unlocking the full potential of data analysis. Our conversation then shifted towards the notion that more data is better, stressing the significance of large and diverse data sets. With more data, AI systems can learn and adapt more effectively, resulting in better predictions and insights. However, it's important to balance quantity with quality and ensure that data is collected ethically and responsibly. We also discussed how AI provides real decision intelligence, how these algorithms can process vast amounts of data to generate actionable insights and support decision making. By harnessing AI's capabilities, organizations can make more informed choices, optimize operations, and drive innovation. Lastly, we discussed the need for academy football in embracing technology. Gavin emphasized that technology, including AI and data analysis, can significantly enhance play development, talent identification, and team performance. By leveraging technology, academy football programs can gain a competitive edge and nurture the next generation of football stars. I hope you found today's episode informative and thought-provoking. Remember to subscribe to our podcast and follow us on social media to stay up to date on upcoming episodes. We appreciate your continued support and welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Your engagement is appreciated, and we encourage you to share the podcast with others who may find it valuable. Until next time, keep exploring, innovating, and embracing the power of technology. In our next episode, we'll be discussing all things mindset and mental preparation, the topic of how to develop a winning mentality with the Sumo Guy. It's going to be an exciting and inspiring discussion you won't want to miss, so stay tuned for that. Remember, your development as a football player is a journey, and we're here to support you every step of the way. Keep working hard, stay passionate, and never stop chasing your dreams. Until next time, take care, and we look forward to you joining us next week when we bring you another interview from the locker.